Hello and welcome to this week's Home is Where the Hearth is podcast in the Inner Sanctum. Thanks as always for being a member of the Inner Sanctum and for joining me. We are on the third part, which I don't know which is going to be the last part. Why even worry about such things? If it's not, we'll continue with the same theme next week. But we're in the middle of doing several talks here, several discussions on chivalry and literature. So we've looked at what chivalry is and isn't, and we've looked at how it's present in works such as The Red Book of Montserrat, which is actually a work of music dedicated to the Blessed Virgin. We've looked at it going right back to the relationship between Odysseus and Penelope in the Odyssey, so pre-Christian times, Dante and Beatrice, of course. And then we concluded last week, with a look at some of the chivalry in Shakespeare, both its presence and its absence. So its absence in Romeo and Juliet, and its presence and absence in Merchant of Venice, and its presence in The Tempest. Today, however, we're going to move on, and we're actually going to begin, however, with a great contemporary of William Shakespeare, and that is, of course, Miguel de Cervantes. The Spanish writer, of course, and Don Quixote, generally considered to be the first novel, or the first modern novel. I don't know if there's any such thing as a non-modern novel. So that was published basically in two parts, I think 1605 or 1606, and about 10 years after that, 1615, 1616. So again, the exact contemporary with Shakespeare. Now, of course, Don Quixote, we can't really talk about literature and chivalry without talking about Don Quixote. He's at least a would-be or wannabe knight. He wants to be chivalrous. He's impacted, influenced, affected, infected, perhaps, by reading of what we might call his lowbrow or trashy romantic tales of daring do, tales of chivalry. And you know, we mustn't read Don Quixote without keeping its denouement, its conclusion, in sight and in mind. And of course, at the end of Don Quixote, Don Quixote repents of his foolishness. He is reconciled with Holy Mother Church and confesses his sins. So we certainly shouldn't fall into the trap or the mistake of believing that Don Quixote's approach and practice of chivalry in the novel is unproblematic. It certainly is not. I think the key thing about it is the tension between what we might call the romantic naivete and fantasizing of Don Quixote and the cynical worldliness and cynical worldly so-called realism of Sancho Panza. And it's the, you know, his Don Quixote's sidekick, and you know that if you like, that he Sancho Panza plays the straight man, Don Quixote's being the comic, being the fool. And certainly, you know, great writers such as Dostoevsky have seen in Don Quixote an image of the holy fool, the fool for Christ, le jongleur de Dieu, God's juggler. We discussed, I think, or at least I hope we did, St. Francis of Assisi in our discussion of chivalry and literature, this great troubadour for God, God's troubadour, God's juggler, the fool for Christ. So there's an element of that Don Quixote, and insofar as that is an accurate element, it's a good element and something in Don Quixote we feel comfortable with. And certainly, you know, if we're forced to choose between seeing the world with a romantic naivete, with, if you like, an innocence akin to the childlike, that is certainly preferable to seeing it through the eyes of cynicism. In that sense, certainly, we can see Don Quixote's worldview, albeit one based on fantasy, as preferable to a word worse than Sanchopanza represents in the novel. So we see comic things. So, you know, we obviously chivalry. The knight must have a lady to champion. So Don Quixote comes up with this imaginary lady, Dulcinea. And you know, even the name Dulcinea, sweet. And this is the ideal lady, the idyllic lady, the perfect lady. Don Quixote is Dulcinea is the Don Quixote, what Beatrice is to Dante. But of course, in the novel, we discover that Dulcinea is actually based upon a real life woman, Aldonza Lorenzo, who is actually a rustic maid. Or actually, she's not a maid. if by maid we mean a maiden, a virgin, she's a prostitute, to put no finer point upon it. So, in other words, that the model for this idealized woman is in fact, in reality, a prostitute. But even then, right, let's look at this. How should we look upon the prostitute? Should we stone the prostitute? The scribes, Pharisees, and hypocrites would suggest? Or should we love the prostitute, even as we beseech her or him, for that matter, to sin no more? Again, you have to choose between the cynical, judgmental attitude towards the prostitute and the innocent, childlike attitude towards the prostitute. Of course, I don't want to suggest that Christ does not know what the prostitute is. He's not making the mistake of Don Quixote in seeing Mary Magdalene as Dulcinea, although he does see her as the future saint, and not merely as the sinner with the past, but the saint with the future. So even in this, even in his foolishness in idealizing a lady of ill repute as his perfect woman, he's still actually closer to a healthier relationship with reality than to condemn our neighbor. Could say much more about Don Quixote, but I think we'll move on. Another classic that's so often overlooked is I Promessi Sposi, The Betrothed, as it's usually translated, the great early 19th century novel by Alessandro Manzoni. This novel doesn't even know where to start. So I'm not going to try to encapsulate and encompass the whole work in this sort of setup. Suffice to say that I think I have called it arguably the greatest novel ever written, and I'm willing to stand behind that statement. So there's lots of things going on. There's the real life saintly figure Federico Borromeo, a relation to the saint himself, St. Charles Borromeo, in the novel. There are good priests and bad priests, wicked people. There's one of the great conversions of a wicked person. It's difficult to get conversions right in literature. But anyway, from the point of view of chivalry in literature, we should probably speak primarily of the two protagonists, in the betrothed themselves, Lorenzo and Lucia. Lorenzo fails in the chivalrous sense, because he is too prone to act rashly, to act with an undue and indecorous and reckless spontaneity, which gets him into trouble. And of course, poor Lucia is the innocent victim of his recklessness. And yet we can't help liking him, because he's genuine. He genuinely loves Lucia, and he genuinely would lay down his life for her. It's just that he lacks the sanctity, the virtue to actually behave as he should, in the chivalrous sense of the word, towards his lady. Lucia is by far not just the more virtuous of the two, but the smarter, the more intelligent. And one of the stereotypes, the sort of, should we say, feminazi stereotypes, because the radical feminists can be as guilty of stereotyping as any racist or Nazi, is that, you know, that the whole of Western literature is treating the woman with contempt or as an inferior or looking down on her. In actual fact, in the greatest literature, we see that the male writers putting the women on a pedestal and looking up to them, looking up at them, feeling unworthy of them. We can see this certainly in Homer's depiction of Penelope. We can certainly see it in Dante's depiction of Beatrice. For me, the character of Shakespeare is that's the most formidable and wise and virtuous and all of the above rolled into one is Portia in The Merchant of Venice. So Shakespeare himself, if you like, saves his best for the best that there is in terms of the feminine. But again, in The Betrothed, Lucia has all the virtues that Lorenzo lacks. She has more intelligence than Lorenzo. We might even be tempted to roll our eyes at times with Lorenzo's behavior and wonder why Lucia bothers with him. But you know, it's not for us to judge the feelings or the emotions of lovers. Again, through all sorts of, ultimately, one thing that Manzoni shows in I Promessi Sposi is that behind all is providence, that God's presence is never lacking. One of the brilliant things about the novel. And all is well, ultimately, with Lorenzo and Lucia, not ultimately because of anything Lorenzo did. whether he learns, you know, he's a homo viator, he's on a journey, and he learns. But basically, there's the lovers are looked after by the loving God. Let's move into the 20th century now for the remainder of the talk. We're almost out of time, so perhaps actually I'm just going to set it up rather than talk about it now. So let me just say that what I'm like to discuss in what I presume will be the concluding discussion, the fourth and final discussion on chivalry and literature. We're going to go moving to the 20th century, and I'll look at the following works. The Ball and the Cross by G.K. Chesterton, Perelandra by C.S. Lewis, and The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien. So join me next week as we go from Chesterton to C.S. Lewis to J.R.R. Tolkien. Well, that's never a bad journey, to be honest, is it? Until then, thanks so much as always for joining me, and do join me next week for the fourth and presumably final and concluding part of our discussion of chivalry and literature in The Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast. Thanks so much as always for joining me. Goodbye and God bless.